You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today, we'll be going to the archives to hear a presentation by Jim Dixon. Jim Dixon was actively involved in the work of the Association for Research and Enlightenment from 1956 until his death in 2011. Moving from Texas to Virginia Beach in January 1993, Jim joined the ARE headquarters staff, serving as manager of the Search for God Study Group department for 3 years before expanding his duties to become a representative for the Search for God program and as roving ambassador for the ARE. Jim traveled throughout the United States, Canada, and other countries, offering lecture programs, conferences, seminars, and retreats based upon the readings. He also served as a member of the National ARE Board of Trustees for 2 terms.
I have to confess, this is a pretty emotional way to start a talk, because all of these people who have been honored tonight are so important in this whole 36-year progression that I personally have had in this work. I remember so well the first time I came to headquarters, and here was Nell Claremont with a big, bright hibiscus blossom in the side of her head, just beaming, you know, as I came in the door. I mean, Mae Gimbert St. Clair, excuse me. Nell came later. Excuse me. But it really is a joy and a pleasure for me to be here. It's been many years since I was at Congress last. 1981 was the last Congress, after having been up here for many years prior to that. And I can't tell you how pleased I am to be involved with this whole sense of newness and renewal and new thrust of the work that's taking place among all of us. And I agree with Harmon, we really do have to credit Ed Johnson as being the spark plug for this, because he's the one who's setting it in motion and very quietly in the background of it, urging people on. And I really do love this. Thank you. We titled this talk tonight, Living the Christ Life, and I have to tell you, I'm not up here as an example of one who lives the Christ life. I spent a good many years trying to get the hang of it, you know, and I've had a few glimmerings of success along the way, and some of those I want to share with you tonight. Before I do that, though, I want to remind us of a few basic principles, a few basic concepts that are in the Edgar Cayce readings that we can't remind ourselves of too often. Now, I have to be careful, you see. Bruce says, doesn't matter what you title Jim's talk, he always says the same thing. And that's probably true. There are but so many ways you can say the truth as you understand it. But we title this Living the Christ Life. Now, the very first principle that I think we must keep uppermost in our mind as we think about ourselves and the work that we're about this week and about our lives and what we're doing is the fact that we are not the physical, ego-oriented persons that we normally identify ourselves and others to be. We are soul entities. We are eternal. Blows your mind when you think about it, and yet if the Edgar Cayce readings are true, and I'm convinced they are true, this is the truth of our nature. We are soul beings, soul entities. Another principle that we have to remind ourselves of is that this earth plane was not invented for our habitation. This is not our natural habitat. We have thrust ourselves into it. We have made ourselves a portion of it. And in the process, have made ourselves subject to the laws that govern the earth plane and everything, the cycles of life especially that we call reincarnation and that we call karma. And blessedly, you know, we have that one who brought grace to us. And that's what we need to keep our minds acutely aware of. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with the earth. You see, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. But the sad thing is that because of the reality of us, at the soul level, there's nothing that we can't accomplish for the good not only of this world, but of all the worlds, all of the universes. And I like to use the analogy that they were kind of like a research physicist, say, a man who has degrees from the greatest universities in the world, who can accomplish great good for all humankind, and he chooses to go to kindergarten every day and play with building blocks. You see, that's exactly what we're doing when we as soul entities come into this earth plane and build these great enormous structures that we build and these great enormous civilizations. And we're just like kids on the beach, you know, who spend enormous energy and enormous time building sandcastles, and we get bored with them and we strike them down, we demolish them completely, then start all over again, building another civilization, building another society. We use our energies in such game playing, because our lives in the earth are just that. They are games, you know, to the soul. They're kid games. They're kindergarten games. I love those songs we sang in here with the clanking of the sticks and all that kind of thing, because that's so typical of what we are about as souls in the earth. I want us to keep that uppermost in our thoughts when we're talking about living the Christ life and when we're talking about the reality of us. The Christ has been involved in every aspect of everything that has ever taken place in this earth plane. Nothing has taken place that wasn't brought into being because of the activity of the Christ itself. Now, according to the Edgar Cayce readings, Jesus was the first. Thanks, Bruce. We share everything. I thought he might kiss me on the cheek because he told us a story about the way a man kept another man from snoring. They were sharing a room in a hunting lodge one time, and he found out that this man he was rooming with was an enormous snorer, you know, the kind that would just rock the walls of the thing. And so the next morning, you don't mind if I tell this story, do you? The next morning, when all these hunters came down for breakfast, here was this new guy, the snorer, the one who had been there before and everyone knew snored so badly, dragging in great big bags under his eyes, and he was just limp as a dish rag. You know, he obviously hadn't slept all night long. But the new guy came in all fresh and ready to go hunting and that kind of thing. And somebody asked him, what in the world happened? Didn't that guy snore all night? He said, no, he didn't snore a bit. Didn't snore once. Says, well, why is that? How did you accomplish that? He said, well, before we got ready for bed, we were down in the restroom, and we brushed our teeth, and we put on our pajamas, and we got back to our room, and he was sitting on the edge of his bunk, so I sat on the edge of my bunk right across from him, and before I crawled in bed and pulled up the covers, I leaned over and I kissed him on the cheek. That's a good friend of Bruce Bickham's. Now, Jesus, who came along, gave us very simple guidelines for living the Christ life. Very simple. So simple we can ignore them, and we do ignore them. Every one of us ignores them, some to more degrees than another. But some of these, which are familiar to us, and I'm not telling you anything new. As a matter of fact, you won't hear anything new from me tonight. This is all old stuff, you know. But we need to remind ourselves of it. Jesus said, love God with your heart, your mind, and your soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said, on these two commandments hang all the law and all the prophets. Love God, love neighbor as self. How difficult we find it sometimes to look around at our neighbors and look at what they're doing and how they're acting and the lifestyle they're choosing to live in. How difficult we find it to say, I love that person. Now, let's differentiate here. You can love somebody without liking them. You know, you can love somebody without condoning what they're doing or approving of the lifestyle they've chosen. And Jesus didn't mean you have to like everybody. You don't have to like what the Saddam Husseins of our civilization do, but you sure do have to love them. God is always imminently involved in everything that we are involved in. It's very important for us to remember ourselves from that frame of reference and to begin to act that way, you know, to begin to acknowledge that if God is in the midst of us, then whatever is taking place must have purpose. whether it's that God would use us for a particular job at a particular time, there is always purpose in everything that we do, all of the relationships we developed, everywhere we go, because if the Edgar Cayce readings are correct, there has never been a place we've been that wasn't prepared for us by the Christ itself. We have been guided every step of every journey we've ever taken by the Christ to be where the Christ would have us be, that we may begin to realize our own needs and to fulfill those needs, but at the same time to be there in behalf of others that the Christ would serve through us. You see, and we never know what's taking place. I have to share a funny story with you. One time I was doing a course at the one of the community colleges in Dallas, and it was a course based on the Edgar Cayce readings. I think we titled my talk that time, Meditation According to the Edgar Cayce Readings.
We'll be right back with more with Jim Dixon on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Jim Dixon.
Had about 16 or 18 people show up for the first session, and everybody, you know, as adults do when they go into the college atmosphere, they begin to wear sloppy shirts, and some of them come in barefooted and all that kind of thing. But one young woman came in, and she was dressed up to the eyeballs. I mean, she had on the best-looking suit you ever saw in your life, and she had on hose and high heels, gloves on her hands. She had a hat on her head. I thought, what is she doing here? You know, where in the world did she come in from? And she sat there, she was sitting there with her arms folded and her legs crossed, and she had this set look on her face, you know, and I thought, well, she won't be back next week, you know. but the evening wore on, and we reached the break time, and I had taken a box of representative publications based on the Edgar Cayce readings, and I told all of them who were there that look through these. If you want any of them, they are for sale. I'll be glad to take your money. But I also want you to have an idea of the various subjects that are covered. And I had there, you know, Edgar Cayce on ESP and Edgar Cayce on Atlantis and Edgar Cayce on reincarnation and all of these things. I wanted them to know what was available to them if they wanted to read and fill in on this. Well, at the break, this young woman went over and she pawed through these things and she came, handed me two or three books. And she said, would you tell me how much I owe you for these? And so I added it all up real quick, and I said, when I handed them back to her, I said, boy, you just shot hell out of $10. And she paid me the $9.85 or whatever it was, you know. And the next week, she was back. She had taken off her gloves and she had taken off her hat. She didn't have on stockings that night. She was a little bit more relaxed. And at the break time, she came up to me and she says, I have to confess something to you. And I said, what's that? She says, I came here last week because a good friend of mine told me I should come to hear Jim Dixon. I said, that's something you really should go and experience. And she said, I came prepared to dislike you intently. She said, and I was convinced that if you started talking about this spiritual stuff and about Jesus and about God, said, I was just going to get up and walk out and let you know how I felt about it. Said, but when I handed you that stack of books and you gave them back to me and said I'd shot hell out of $10, said, I knew you were my kind of man. We never know how we are affecting people, you know. And if you take seriously this search for God affirmation that says, not my will but thine, O Lord, be done in me and through me, you know, it goes on to say, here am I, send me, use me. If you take that seriously and if you use it, then Spirit's going to use you in behalf of other people, and sometime at the strangest moments, you know, you never know. Listen how gently and how nicely the Edgar Cayce readings follow up on these guidelines that Jesus gave us, you know, about love God with your heart and your mind and your soul and so on. Jesus also said, as you would do to others, as ye would that others do to you, do ye likewise unto them. In other words, be what you would have the other person be for you. Be what you would pray to be made. We have to be. We have to apply what we understand of the Christ and of God if we're going to be representative for that energy in the earth. The Edgar Cayce reading, 792-1, and I always try to remember to give the reading reference, although I've got one reference tonight, one quotation tonight that I want to give you that I don't have a reference for, and I'll probably get in trouble for it, but I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. See, in Texas, we just go ahead and do it, and then we take the consequences. Okay. Reading 792-1 says, "As ye then forgive those who trespass, who speak evil, who are ungentle, who are unkind, so may the Father forgive thee when thou art wayward, when thou art headstrong, when thou seekest his face. Then if thou wouldst know what may be the understanding heart, just be kind, just be patient, just be lovely, just be friendly to thy fellow man. Forgive those that speak lightly or unkindly, or who even in premeditated manner do thee evil. For if ye forgive not these, how can thy heavenly Father forgive thee?" Reading 1492-1. The very nature and innate activities create those forces in which there are the inclinations for the entity, in the reverse from love, beauty, nature, to hold little resentments, to become rather of the nature wherein the entity may say in self, "Yes, I can forgive, but I cannot forget." These must be overcome more and more. And this reminded me of a quotation I heard just recently. This gal said, "To err is human." Now, my Yankee wife would have said, "To err is human," but to me, "err" still sounds right. That's the way I grew up with it, you know. To err is human. To forgive takes restraint. To forget you forgave is the mark of a saint. Isn't that great? All right. "For as ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them," is the law, not merely of sacrifice, not merely of recompense, but of grace and mercy. The readings are so direct and yet so gentle with us that we can ignore them too, and a lot of times we do, you know. There are times when we'd be damned if we're going to be gentle with somebody who's being obnoxious, you know, if we're going to be kind to somebody who's been very unkind to us. But this is the admonition that has come down to mankind throughout all eternity, throughout all of our involvement in the earth plane. And Jesus spoke it again, the Edgar Casey readings speak it very eloquently, and yet we continue to hold resentments. We continue to, when we are angry with someone, rather than going to them and resolving it in a loving way and in a forgiving kind of way, we hold that anger because we're proud of it. We built it, and it's ours, you know. And if the readings are correct, as we think about each person that we come in contact with, everybody we work with, the person we sit across the breakfast table from, the person who's driving down the street like a maniac, if we are aware of what we think about those persons, then we can begin to see the life that we're building for ourselves, because every thought we think is building the reality of our experience, and we cannot escape that. We cannot ignore that. We cannot avoid that. When you look at the television set and you see the horrible things going on both in our nation and in other nations, and you sit there and you get angry about them or you get all emotionally worked up, you are building your experience based on the thoughts you choose to think, because the readings tell us that you think becomes the basis of your experience in this earth. Now, that gets a little bit too heavy. I try to inject a little bit of humor into these things, because I tend to be pretty serious. I wish I were like Bruce, who can just get up here and say hello and everybody dies laughing, you know. And it's not just that Louisiana accent he's got. Okay. Another of Jesus' guidelines to us was, and I should have said first before I got off on that tangent, "As a man thinketh in his heart, so it is with him." You know, that simple. "As a man thinketh in his heart, so it is with him. As ye do to the least of thy brethren, ye do to thy Maker, God." As ye do to the least of those you meet, you know, on an ongoing basis. And then the one that really is a pretty heavy one when you stop and think of it. Jesus said, "Love one another." That simply, just love one another, you know. And if we can condition ourselves to look at people as we're dealing with them, whether we're in direct contact or whether even on the boob tube, if we can think loving intention toward those persons, then our lives and the lives of those around us are benefited greatly. These things are so simple, and yet we complicate them. Somebody mentioned, probably was Harmon, I don't know, We get so proud of our intellectual capacity. We seem to need to have things that are complex and complicated so that we'll be pleased with ourselves when we really finally fathom them and figure them all out, you know. And yet, life in and of itself, if we're going to live the Christ life, is just as simple as talking to the woman at the well that no one else would address, you know. Acknowledging that the God that you love and that you worship is there, and the Christ has brought you into that relationship for a purpose. Acknowledge that and act on it. Follow the impulses of the things you have. Now, what is meant by love? The readings give us a marvelous, marvelous definition of love. Say, love is giving. Simply that. Love is giving. The giving out of that which is the best within us. That which is of loving intent. That which would help others and would offer hope to others. Love is giving. Khalil Gibran comes along in the Prophet and he says, giving as in yonder valley the myrtle gives of its fragrance to all who pass by. For it knows to withhold is to perish. The minute we withhold love in any degree for any reason, conjure up, we have begun to snuff out to that degree that loving life force that nourishes us. Give, for it knows to love is to perish. Don't question who you're giving it to or whether they deserve it or whether they're going to give it back to you, whether they're going to pass it on. It doesn't matter. Give, simply because that's what you have to give. Give of the best that's within yourself. Now, the readings do tell us, I had to bring this in. You know, it wouldn't be an Edgar Cayce talk if you didn't have. Spirit is the life, mind is the builder, and the physical is the result. Whatever we think about is that pattern which determines the experience that we have. I like, as an architect, or an ex-architect, I'm happy to say now, to think in terms of an extruder. Everything around us, so many things around us are extruded. You know, we have extruded forms that are aluminum, extruded forms that are plastic, extruded forms that are steel, all kinds of extruded forms. All right, you know what an extruder is. Every one of you ladies who has, and men too, forgive me, men do these things nowadays. They didn't when I was growing up, you know, but they do now. Every time you ice a cake or to begin to decorate a cake, you are using an extruder. You have taken this bag that has a little thing that you put on, a little pattern you put on the bottom of it, whether it's a rosette or whatever, and you pour into the bag the icing that has no form of its own. You press it through that pattern, and as it solidifies down here, it does so in exact replication of the pattern it has moved through. Exact replication. The bigger extruders where you take a pattern, you know, for a plastic extrusion. You set it in the extruder.
We'll be right back with more with Jim Dixon on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Jim Dixon.
You set it in the extruder, you press the plastic through, plastic that is molten, has no form of its own, no definition of form of its own. You press it through that extruder, and as it dries on the other side, it solidifies in exact replication of the pattern that it's moved through. Now, I understand this spirit is the life, mind is the builder, physical the result thing, in these terms. We accept for ourselves a truth. Whatever that truth is, you know, whatever it has to do with, we hold a truth pattern in our mind. And spirit, which has no form, no shape of its own, moves through that pattern and brings into our experience an exact replication of the pattern that we've held in our minds. Mind is ever the builder. Now, if there's something we are experiencing that we don't like, you know, that's no longer tenable with us, that we want to change, we don't go out here and fix those things, you know. Well, that's our tendency, you know. We really do that. With our relationships and everything else, we try to go fix them. What we've got to do is determine for ourselves what truth we can hold in our consciousness about that circumstance or that person or whatever is going on. Change that pattern so that it becomes a loving intention, so that it becomes a desire for that which is best for that person. Then we can go move into a relationship and act from a loving, Christ-like frame of reference. Now, if we just go out there bludgeoning around, we may do pretty good on some things, but we also may screw up terribly, and we do. You know, every one of us does that because we move without thinking. We move without giving the Christ an opportunity to be the guide for what we would do and say and be. And living the Christ life involves that you change a lot of concepts that you've held as truth for yourself. You know, be willing to change. If you're not willing to change, then you just, as you resist the Christ movement after you've invited it, and when you invite it, it's going to try to come through, you know. You just get all screwed up. Okay, it's really easy to see God in those things that are warm and fuzzy and feel good in those people who love us and who agree with us and all that kind of thing. But what we must learn to do is to see God in those things that even have negative characteristics involved with them. And I want to share a personal experience that I had one time that taught me without a shadow of a doubt that the Christ is always there when you call on it. Some of you have heard this story. It goes back a good many years. Probably a lot of you have heard it. Those of you who have heard me speak before. But I was kidnapped one night. I had picked up this really nice-looking young man. I was on my way home from work. It was 5:30-ish, maybe 6 o'clock. And this young man was standing by the side of the road. He had on khakis. He had a little brown overnight case. It looked like a military case, and I thought he was a serviceman, you know. And at that time, we lived out from town about 5 miles. Of course, it's right in the heart of Dallas now, but we were out from town. And I told him how far I was going before I turned off, and he said that would be helpful, so he got in the car with me. And we introduced ourselves and, you know, got those amenities over with. And then he said again, said, how far did you say you were going? I said, I'm going to Church Road. It's a red light up here. And when I get there, I have to turn right, so I'll let you out. He reached in his pocket and he pulled out a switchblade knife that I swear to you was that long. He opened that switchblade and he started tapping it on his knee and he said, you just keep on driving. Well, of course I did, you know. My stomach turned over, you can imagine. Blessedly, I had the presence of mind to start praying for that young man and for myself and for the whole situation. And I didn't know what it was. It didn't matter, though. The minute I started praying, I was perfectly at peace about the whole set of circumstances. I knew that I had nothing to fear. I knew that switchblade knife had no power over me. I didn't know where the hell I was going with this young man or how long I was going to be there, but I had nothing to fear about it. It became a wonderful experience. As it happened, he and friends needed a car that night for some kind of job they were going to do, and I didn't know what it was. I didn't ask him. I didn't want to know. I was pretty eager, though, to let him know that he was driving a 63 Plymouth that had push-button controls on it, so I taught him how to use those push-button controls. I didn't want him stripping my car out, you know. So we drove along, and he knew every back road in North Dallas County. As it turned out, I stayed 2.5 hours in the car with him because he had a set time that he needed to meet his friend. The only thing that really disturbed me was that Beth didn't know where I was. And it was a study group night, and there would be people coming in. And I said, let's just stop at a pay station, and you stand there by me and let me call my wife and tell her I've been delayed, and I'm not sure when I'll be in, but I will be home. He says, no, you just keep driving. So I said, all right, I'll keep driving. And I'd try to bring up such things as, you know that what you're doing is not the right thing. And he'd tap that switchblade. Now, he says, don't preach at me. Just keep driving. So I kept driving. Well, 2.5 hours later, he let me out of the car way to hell and gone out in far North Dallas. Again, it's right in the heart of Dallas, you know. This is a residential area that a development was being made. Nobody lived out there. The roads had just been graded. They weren't paved yet. And he had me go way back off over in here, and we stopped the car. And he said, the nearest phone is 5 miles back. If you walk fast, you can get to it, and you can call your wife, and she'll know where you are. Well, by this time, you know, it's 9 o'clock almost. Anyway, he let me take a roll of prints in the back of the car that I needed the next day. He let me take all the keys off the keychain except the keys to the car. He said, you be sure and report this to the police tonight because you don't want to be involved with this car tonight. You know, he was really very considerate of me. He said, when we finish with your car, we'll park it and the police will find it for you and they'll return it to you. And I believed him. I really did. I knew that was the way it was going to be. Well, as it turned out, I did report the thing. I called Beth and two of our study group members. charging over to the Richardson police station and picked me up, and everybody was all this way, you know. So we got back to the house and we sat down and had a meditation concerning this whole set of circumstances and that young man in the car and whatever he and his friends were about. Whatever it was, we didn't care. We invited the Christ to protect and to shed light and to keep any harm from coming to those young men. Well, 2 mornings later, 4 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang and I answered it. It was the Garland, Texas police station. He said, "Mr. Dixon, we found your car." I said, "Fine, you want me to come get—" Oh no, we've got to take it to the pound and we've got to test it for fingerprints and all that kind of stuff. You come get it at 10 o'clock this morning." I wondered why the hell he called me at 4 o'clock in the morning to say come at 10. But he did. So I thanked him. We went to get the car. When we got into it, it cost me $26. And in 1963, $26 was a bunch of money, you know. But I had to pay the towing charges and I had to pay the pound charges and so on. And I want you to know those guys had done more damage to that car with that black powder than anything else. That even in picking it up on the wrecker, they'd broken the tailpipe off, all that kind of stuff. I got in the car, looked down, and in the open ashtray were my car keys. They could have driven that car to the pound. You know, they didn't have to haul it in, but you know, they have their procedures. Anyway, I got my car back and it was okay. They called me a few days later and said, "Mr. Dixon, if we pursue this and find this man, are you going to press charges?" And I said, "No." I said, "The law that young man lives under is far stronger than any law you and I can bring against him. So just let him meet his karma." And the policeman didn't know what in the world I was talking about. But that was okay. Anyway, that experience taught me for all time, and I believe it'll carry on through out of this incarnation and into the next, that I can trust the promise of the Christ. That when I call on him, it is there and right speedily, because it was there immediately when I started praying. I was at perfect peace. And you know, this incident had all the earmarks of being, could have been pretty horrendous. He was serious with that switchblade knife. And I know that if I had resisted him, it could have gotten messy. I'm glad it didn't. You know, I wouldn't want blood all over my car cushions. Question was posed to Edgar Casey. How can I be protected? And the answer is this: surrounding thyself with the Christ consciousness, living daily in that consciousness by thy dealings with others. Did he find fault? Do ye? Did he question purposes? Do ye? Do ye love those who hate thee? He did. Do you keep the words, "Not of myself, but my Father who worketh in and through me," as thy ideal? He did. He is thy pattern. That is thy protection ever. Call upon the Christ. You are always protected, and there's nothing mankind can devise against you that can penetrate that protection. I promise you, there is nothing. There's always strength. There's always the wherewithal for us to move through whatever circumstances life presents to us if we will call on the presence and on the guidance and on the power and on the protection that is inherent in the Christ itself. And with that, I want to share another experience with you. Most of you do know, and Nadine mentioned, my wife of 37 years succumbed to cancer 2 years ago last month. When she was first diagnosed, there was a 7-month period from diagnosis to the time she left. When she was first diagnosed, we really talked seriously about this thing. And we didn't know why she had developed cancer. You know, we were firm believers in the mind is the builder, and we could have really racked our brains wondering why this had come about and what she had done wrong to bring about cancer in her experience and so on. But we did decide between us that whatever took place, God was in the midst of it. Whatever it was, you know, whatever it led to, she could go into perfect remission. God was in the midst of that. It could be terminal, as if all of us weren't involved in terminal conditions in the earth, you know.
We'll be right back with more with Jim Dixon on Reflections. You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Jim Dixon.
Whatever it was, we were determined that we would see God in the midst of it, and we did everything we could do to remind ourselves of that, to keep that uppermost in our mind. And it got to be a pretty horrendous kind of experience. We were driving from the ranch into San Antonio almost every day for some kind of doctor's appointment or therapy or whatever. And it got, you know, pretty hard. The cancer started in the lung and metastasized to the breastbone and then got into the hip and then into the spinal column and up into the brain. It was totally, something was totally irreversible. And as we began more and more to realize the gravity of the thing, we got to talking a lot about how we really felt about such conditions in our experience. Now, Beth and I know that in our very last incarnation together, and it happened to be our last incarnation in the earth, we were brother and sister. And in that incarnation, she was a very popular, much-in-demand concert singer, apparently a very accomplished concert singer. She came into this lifetime with a beautiful, beautiful natural voice, and parents who had the money and the wherewithal and the wisdom to help her train that voice, and it was lovely. In that last incarnation together, she didn't want any kind of family thing to mess up her career. She didn't want children. She was married. But when she came to this country on the boat, if her husband didn't want to come with her, he could stay in Sweden. We lived in Sweden. She just had to sing. Sing was all that was important to her. In this incarnation, family considerations of every conceivable kind prevented her ever really getting going with a professional singing career. Now, those of us who know her know that she gave a great deal of joy and pleasure with that voice of hers, and she really did love to sing for us, and it was a wonderful experience for her to be involved in this. But somewhere along the way, we realized that in that prior incarnation in Sweden, oh, I forgot to tell you, as her brother, I was an absolute ne'er-do-well. I was into booze, and I was into all kinds of high living and promiscuous living, you know, and that was all that was important to me. And I apparently poured myself down the tube because I wound up with a terminal condition of some sort, and it was Beth's job as my sister to be my caretaker. Now, when she came up with this cancer thing, we clued in at some point along the way that this was a karmic necessity that I had, you know, to be her caretaker. We convinced ourselves that we were in it together, and it was for the best thing for both of us, you know. But anyway, two or three times along the way, when things just got so tough and she was in so much discomfort and so much pain that she could hardly handle it, and certainly we could barely keep a concept of God being in the midst of it, Beth would look up at me and she'd say, "I'm so glad you deserved this." It made all the difference in the world with the way we were able to deal with this condition that really was pretty traumatic, pretty hard to take, you know. At any rate, she did pass over two years ago last month. Harmon and June came down to the ranch and did a remarkable memorial service for her. And at sunset time, we went out on the point, on a point up above the Guadalupe River, about 150 feet up. Great big, huge boulders. One of Beth's favorite places on the whole ranch. And we had a kind of, supposed to have been a sunset service, but as sunset time drew near, you never saw such clouds begin to billow up and thunder begin to come along and lightning flashing across the sky. Harmon said, "Beth's letting us know she's here." At any rate, we did scatter her ashes off the bluff above the Guadalupe because that was one of her favorite spots. And there's no question in my mind that Beth is often about her business. We had talked during the course of her illness about what we really believed in, and we really hoped that if she did go on and pass on over, that we'd be able to have contact later and all that kind of thing. So I was really convinced after Beth passed over that it would just be no time at all before here she would be back, you know, communicating with me in some way. Now, we had built a deck out across the back of this little manufactured house we live in, because we live right on the edge of a canyon. We look right down into the depths of this canyon, and there are birds by the hundreds, and the deer come around for deer corn morning and evening, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place to live. I spent a lot of time out there the summer after she left. That became my therapy center. I sat out there, and I'd cry a lot, and I'd talk to Beth. I'd shout at her, and I'd cuss her out. I really got it out of my system, whatever was needed at the time.
And now it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. Kimberly Rose currently has her sessions involving the Crystalline Consciousness Technique on sale at half price. To find out more, go to kimmyrose.com. That's KIMMIERose.com. Well, hello.
Hello.
And what's today's Thought for the Day?
Today's Thought for the Day is reading 1603:1. In the manner, the way ye attend, ye treat or ye hold, in thy mental self, thy brother's position, or thy neighbor's or thy friend's as thy own, that is the manner, the concept, ye hold of the Creator. I'm going to listen to you because I know that I just feel like I would love to ask you to just give that, like feel that and explain that to people because you do this well. You do.
I know that in the New Testament it talks about, or Jesus said that how can you love God if you don't love your brother? And I think that can be, some people might think they should go off perhaps on top of a mountain by themselves and commune with God. But the fact is you can't ignore those around you. In fact, you have to love them. And that's one way of getting closer to God. That's an important way.
I think that's so important. And when you talk about that community, churches, you know, people think that it's just about sitting and, you know, listening and following, you know, whatever is told to them, when really it's about sharing. It's about true. It's about community. I see true democracy is the space that we all share and listen to one another. To me, it's this reading too. It's in the mental self and looking at your brother and understanding and then also sharing what you feel. If you don't choose to really be open to understand another person, how can you really, really understand that, you know, yourself? Because we are all manifested through and made through our Creator. So how could you really do that? You can't.
Well, thank you for doing the thought for the day today.
Art, thank you so, so much.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks for listening as we went to the archives to hear a presentation by Jim Dixon. Thanks to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.